Okay, but today, what I'm focused on today is last week we discussed the period of Sfiras Omer, counting of the Omer. And we discussed, not in terms of the mourning practices which creep in during this time, we discussed the excitement and the joy and our responsibility during this time. So last week we discussed how the time of Sfiras Omer, we count the Omer as a build-up to Shavuos, to receive the Torah. It shows a connection between Pesach and Shavuos. The freedom leads us to purpose. Freedom leads us to Torah. They're inextricably connected. You can't separate the two. And we discussed how it's a time of spiritual growth. We're supposed to be working on our character, working on understanding the bigger ideas of this, basically of Emunah, the fundamentals of Judaism. That's this time period. So that was last week's discussion. This week, I want to discuss the other aspect of this time of year, which is there are mourning practices which creep in to Sfiras Omer. These are much, much later customs. The counting the Omer itself is based in the Torah itself. And really it should be a time of excitement and anticipation for Shavuos, for receiving the Torah. That's what it should be. But yet, we have now in halacha, in our modern practice, based on our custom, is that we mourn during this time of year. And I'll discuss why we mourn, but there are mourning practices which set in to this time of year as well. Just in short, I don't want to discuss the technicality of it, but the mourning practices in general are we don't get married during this time of year, no weddings, shaving is limited, listening to music, dancing, expressions of joy, that's limited during this time of year. And those are all practices of mourning. And those, there's different customs as to which days these apply, but basically most people will choose either to observe these practices from after Pesach through Lag BaOmer, or from Rosh Chodesh Iyar through right before Shavuos. Those are the two main customs. And each one is basically 32 days of mourning. If you do the math, it's 32 days where you're mourning. So that's where the custom is, and those are the ways you apply the custom is through you're not getting married during this time, shaving for women, the shaving is allowed for women, music and dancing, and you know, festive occasions, that's the way we limit here. But why do we fast? I mean, why do we mourn? We don't fast. Why do we mourn? Why do we mourn at this time of year? So, there are many reasons given. The primary reason which is quoted is that we're mourning over the deaths of the students of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva, really one of the greatest teachers we ever had, really the entire Mishnah and Talmud is founded upon Rabbi Akiva's teachings, and he had 24,000 students die in a plague during this time of year. It's written in the Gemara. The Gemara says that 12,000 pairs of students died in a plague of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva's students died during a plague, and the Gemara says it was between Pesach and Shavuos, this time of year. And based on that, we mourn. The Gemara asks, well, why did they die? Why did God allow plague to take effect on these people? The Gemara says they didn't give respect to one another. And that was the problem. So whenever we see such a massive tragedy, especially to our greatest scholars, we have to ask, you know, why did God allow this to happen? So the answer given in the Gemara is that because they didn't respect one another. And I want to elaborate more on that as we go through. That's the main reason quoted for our mourning during this time of year. The reason that we only do the 32 days is because on Lag BaOmer, they didn't die. So the first 32, there were 32 days where the plague was taking effect. On the 33rd day, Lag BaOmer, on that day, the students, the plague ceased, no one else died, therefore that's a joyous day. And I'll discuss that more as well. So that's one reason given for the mourning during this time of year. Other reasons that are quoted is that there's really a disproportionate amount of anti-Semitism, pogroms, massacres of Jews throughout history during this time of year. They say during the Crusades, some of the major massacres of Jews happened during this time of year. Even if you look in history books, this time of year disproportionately has a lot more anti-Semitism and incidents of anti-Semitism than other times of year.
So, I was thinking that was Tisha B'Av, but I
didn't know. Tisha B'Av as well. I mean, that's correct.
Well,
right.
Okay.
But Tisha B'Av has much earlier sources. I mean, the destruction of the temple is Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av is a day where, in that particular day, many negative things have happened. But in terms of later in history, when you talk about massacres and pogroms and things of the sort, many of them happen during this time of year, between Pesach and Shavuos. So that's another reason given for mourning during this time of year. But I want to focus in on the main reason given. The main reason given is the death of the students of Rabbi Akiva. And I want to focus on that a little bit, because there are no coincidences. The fact that the Gemara says that they die specifically during this time of year means that there's a link between their death and this time of year that we're in. The fact that we're right now in between Pesach and Shavuos, the fact that we're during the time of Sfiras HaOmer, where we count the Omer, and the fact that during that time period his students died, there has to be some sort of link. So what is that link? So last week we touched on it a little bit, which is one major focus of Sfiras HaOmer, when we count the Omer. One major focus at this time of year is we focus on the growth of character, that we should become, you know, good, ethical people of good character traits, respecting one another, caring for one another. That's a major focus of the year. And as the Jews left Egypt and prepared to receive the Torah, one of their major focuses has to be, do they improve their own personal character? And which is why we have a custom during this time of year to study Pirkei Avos, because that focuses very much on character traits. And the 49 days in between Pesach and Shavuos, each day is supposed to be designated for a different part of your character, to work on your character in a different way. So that is a theme during this time of year. The explanation, and it doesn't mean we have to be perfect. We don't want to be perfect. We're not going to, 49 days doesn't make you a perfect person. Obviously not. But it means we're going to try to become this more respectable, compassionate, caring people during this time of year. And you know, it's a lifetime of work, and no one's going to reach perfection by Shavuos. But it's something that has to be in the forefront of our minds during this time of year, which is we want to perfect our character, perfect our character traits. And the explanation of this, which we also touched on last week, is that the Torah is God's work, and God wants the Torah to go to human beings, not to animals. A human being means, like we say in Yiddish, you have to act like a mensch. You know, if you only act like a mensch, so then that's the hallmark of what it means to be a human being, that we're compassionate, we care, we're ethical, we reach out, we respect each other. If we're acting totally selfish and self-focused and animalistic, so then we're not worthy of receiving God's Torah. So God says, before I give you my Torah, I want you to show me you can act as a nice, ethical, dignified, respectable human being. Once you can show me that, then you deserve receiving my Torah. So I'm giving you your 49 days between Pesach and Shavuos to work on this. The Shavuos comes, I can give you the Torah on Shavuos, and you'll be someone worthy of receiving the Torah. You'll no longer be acting in an animalistic way, you'll be acting like a human being. You'll be acting like a mensch. And that's part of the concept of, it's called Derech Eretz Kamel Torah, the fact that Derech Eretz, acting like a respectable person, is a prerequisite to Torah. That's the quote from the rabbis from the Midrash. So that's what it means, that we have to act like human beings first, and then we can receive the Torah. But if we act like animals, if we, you know, treat others like garbage, we don't respect others, we don't reach out to others, we're not ethical, we lie, we cheat, we're selfish, that's animalistic behavior. If we can act like human beings, then we can tap into what it means to be a human being. At that point, we can be worthy of receiving God's Torah. So that's the understanding of why this is a period of the year focused in on working on your character, is because we have to become people of upstanding character in order to be worthy of receiving God's Torah. God doesn't want to give his Torah to somebody who is a terrible person. And on the other hand, when you receive God's Torah, that means you are representative of God himself. And to be representative of God, that means you have to act accordingly. So if you can't act accordingly in your relationships with others, then you can't represent what it means to be a Jew. So all those concepts tie into Derech Eretz Kamel Torah, that we have this prerequisite for receiving the Torah is to act as an ethical, nice person. You know, a good translation of Derech Eretz is hard to find, but I think we all get the idea. Acting like a mensch, I think, is the best translation, even though it's not a translation. But, you know, you act like a mensch, and once you act like a mensch, then you can receive the Torah. So if we were to relate this to the students of Rabbi Akiva, so again, we're talking about very, very elevated spiritual people. Rabbi Akiva was one of our greatest teachers ever. His students were really the elites of the Jewish people at that time, from a superficial perspective. I mean, God never saw deeper. But everyone looked at this. This is Rabbi Akiva's academy. In his academy, in his yeshiva, he had thousands and thousands of students. They were these scholars of the Jewish people. And seemingly, everyone respected them in that way. They were our spiritual guides, spiritual leaders. And it was extremely devastating. You can imagine 24,000 people, God forbid, dying in a plague. And people who we looked at as our leaders, as our sages, as our guides, they all passed away. And it was a terrible, terrible tragedy for the Jewish people. So we're talking about people who are on a very high level, and we say they didn't respect one another. It's on their own level. It could be that if we watched them, we would see a lot of respect. But in a very fine, subtle way, there's a lack of respect for each other. And God holds bigger people to bigger standards. So the fact they're on such a high level means God held them to very high standards. So I just want to put that in perspective. But when we think about his students, not respecting one another, so that's really the opposite of what we're supposed to focus on this time of year. We're supposed to focus on respect for other human beings, treating them in a dignified way, treating them in a respectable way. If Rabbi Akiva's students didn't respect one another, it's called appropriate time of year, where that should be emphasized this time of year. Because our focus time of year is to work on how we relate to others. So since they didn't relate to one another in the appropriate manner, that's why God killed them this time of year. And in a certain sense, they weren't deserving of reaching Shavuos. They weren't deserving of receiving God's Torah in Shavuos, as we reenacted every single year, because they were not acting on their level. They weren't acting like a mensch should act. And that's why that fits this time of year. So for us, they're on their own level, and it's not up to us to judge Rabbi Akiva's students. And Rabbi Akiva, of course, was devastated, and he was able to rebuild afterwards. The Gemara describes he actually picked up 5 students afterwards, from 24,000 students to 5 students. He worked with those 5 students, and those 5 students became the greatest sages and proliferators of Torah amongst Jewish people after that. So, I mean, if you can imagine Rabbi Akiva himself, after losing 24,000 students, to be able to pick up the pieces and start over again with 5, I mean, I'm sure it hit him very, very, very dramatically. But he was able to pick up and move on after that. But the lesson for us is it's a very potent lesson in the fact that this time of year, the focus has to be on, I have to respect each and every person I meet, treat them with dignity, honesty, with love, with compassion. That's my job. And that's what makes me a person worthy of connecting with God and receiving His Torah. If I can't do that, so then I don't deserve God's Torah and Shavuos. And that's the focus. So they're held up for us as a model, as a lesson. But look what happens if you even if you're on the level of Rabbi Akiva's students, if you cannot respect another human being, then you don't deserve the Torah. You know, we think they're the greatest scholars around, and they probably were in terms of their knowledge. But they weren't worthy of God's Torah because they couldn't respect other human beings. Right. It's a very powerful lesson.
Are you saying that midos are more important than scholarship?
Not more important, but I'd say a prerequisite. It's a foundation for scholarship. Somebody who's a scholar but doesn't know how to act with good midos, so then we don't view that person as a Jewish leader, as a sage. We view them as a person who's sort of corrupt, unbalanced, upside down. Like, for instance, I think we gave the example last week. You can meet somebody who's a very fine person, very kind, very compassionate, but yet they're not religious. So you don't look at that person askance. You say he's a very nice person. As a believer, I wish I could teach him more. I wish that I could bring religion to his life. But he's not a terrible person. You find somebody who acts religious, but yet treats you like garbage. You view that person as totally corrupt, backwards. He's a hypocrite. Because there has to be a foundation of midos before you're ready to move on to the next step. And again, not perfection, but general acting like a mensch. If we can reach that step, so then we're ready to move on to the next step, which is becoming more spiritual, reaching out to God. But it's like a pyramid. So you have to build up, brick by brick and get there. So I don't want to say it's more important. I want to say it's just a foundation for what it means to really excel in your relationship with God as a Jew. So that's the lesson of Rabbi Akiva's students. And we have to take it to heart. So this time of year, every single year, we have these practices where we don't experience too much joy for 32 days in order so that we can focus in on that lesson. We can remember every single year before we reach Shavuos, we have to remember what it means to be worthy of receiving God's Torah, which is acting in a manner accordingly. So now the interesting thing is that on Lag BaOmer is the day where the plague ceased and no one else died on Lag BaOmer. And Lag BaOmer is a day of celebration. It's coming up this year. It's going to be on Motzei Shabbos, Saturday night. It's coming up in a few weeks, two Saturday nights from now. And it's a very joyous day. And it's a day where that we can start listening to music, shave, weddings start happening at Lag BaOmer. It's a day where it's a big joy amongst the Jewish people. But there are a lot of customs that go along with Lag BaOmer. For instance, Lag BaOmer is a time. Not only is it the time where the plague ceased to kill Rabbi Akiva's students, but also it's the yahrzeit of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was one of the greatest of the Tanayim during the period of the Mishnah. He was the one who introduced to us the Zohar. He was the author of the Zohar, the one who brought really Kabbalah, mysticism to the Jewish people. So it was part of the oral tradition, but he's the one who really who really proliferated those teachings and wrote it down in the book of the Zohar. And to this very day, you know, when it comes to Kabbalah, the Zohar is the primary text that is the source of all Kabbalistic works. So Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was the one who recorded that all, and he's the one who's responsible for introducing that to Jewish people. His yortzeit is on Lag BaOmer. So based on his yortzeit on Lag BaOmer, there's a lot of celebration which is focused on that.
Can you spell his name phonetically?
Rabbi Shimon, Shimon, Bar, Bar, Yochai, Yochai. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai.
Thank you. And can you just spell phonetically the rabbi who's to the 24,000 students?
Akiva, A-K-I-V-A. So the day, it's interesting, so there's one major custom of Jewish people, which is to make bonfires in Lag BaOmer. Especially in Israel. If you go to Israel in Lag BaOmer, you'll see bonfires. Every 10 feet, there's another bonfire in there. You ever been there before? Yeah.
She
went to Maryland?
Yeah.
You were there? I was never there. Wow, yeah.
What's the significance of the bonfire?
So I'll talk about that in a second. There is a custom to make bonfires, and there's a especially large celebration at the grave of Rosh Shimon Bar Yochai, the city of Maryland. You know, thousands of people gathered there. I've never been there, but here it's just amazing.
Yeah. I was there on an air shot.
So yeah, it's
really unbelievable.
Yeah, here it's just wild. Just yeah. All sorts of.
I read a joke that after Israel's the only place in the world after Lag BaOmer, they see how bad the air is, the environment. You know, in each city, like, this city's worse, okay.
After all the fires and smoke come down, right. Yeah, so that's what it's like there. And the understanding of the bonfires is that the Zohar records that on the day where Rabbi Shimon died, which is Lag BaOmer, that's the day where he revealed a great bulk of his teachings. That's Lag BaOmer. And his teachings brought light to the world. He enlightened the world, basically, as the Zohar says. So
he revealed it the day he died?
The day he died. He revealed it. The day he died, he revealed many of his teachings. It's all recorded in the Zohar. There's a part of the Zohar, it's called Idra Zuta, is what it's called, and it records the story of the day of his death, and everything he taught the day of his death. And it says that he brought so much light to the world the day of his death. So therefore, we make bonfires to symbolize that.
So should we be lighting a yortzeit candle for him as well?
I guess the bonfires are the big yortzeit candles. Yeah, I guess that's what they are. The big communal yortzeit candles. Say, you don't find those much in America. The yeshiva does make a bonfire. You know, they make one, you know. So they do a bonfire there. But you don't find them as much in America.
Boy Scouts usually do it.
Oh, yeah?
The Academy.
Where do they do it?
The fire itself,
the
Boy Scouts.
The fire. No, it was they got the Academy's field or something?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know where the track is. They usually.
Right. And Israel is an amazing sight because Israel, you know, especially, you know, Jerusalem is very hilly. So you can see, like, all around you, and you see bonfires everywhere. It's a little scary, but, you know, I guess the fire department is on call that night. So they know what they're getting in for. But that's Lag BaOmer. So, again, we have to connect. What's the connection between death and Rabbi Akiva's students and Lag BaOmer? It's not a coincidence. It happened to be they stopped dying Lag BaOmer. It happens to be it's the yortzeit of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. There still happens to be in God's world. There's no coincidences. So what's the connection there? There's some connection. So I want to share with you, I'm sure there's more than one connection, but I want to share with you a connection that I did see explained. It was written in a book called Emunah Sitecha, written by Rabbi Moshe Wolfson, who currently lives in New York. He's a teacher, Rabbi Mishul in New York. It's a very deep work book that he wrote. It's called Emunah Sitecha. And he tries to describe at least one connection between the death of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and Rabbi Akiva's students. And in a sense, the fact they stopped dying on that day means that there's a lesson that day which should rectify the problem which occurred during the death of the students. Their problem was they didn't honor or respect one another. So there has to be something in the day of Lag BaOmer which teaches us how to respect one another. So what is that lesson in Lag BaOmer? So we have to veer off topic just for a minute to explain an idea, and then we'll come back on topic again. The Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's teachings are referred to as Torah Sod. Literally, Sod means like it's kind of secret. I hate using the word secret. It's not secrets. It shows the depth of Torah. It shows that there's so much more than meets the eye to God's Torah. That's the idea of Torah Sod. That's what he revealed to us. He revealed to us Kabbalah, mysticism. It's a much deeper look at Torah. It shows you the depths of how the world works, how society works, how God works. That's what this whole portion of Torah is supposed to teach a person. And that's what he revealed to us. By writing the Zohar, by teaching his students, he unlocked for us these depths of Torah. The Torah has, according to the rabbis tell us, Torah has four layers of meaning. The acronym is called Pardes, and Pardes stands for, in Hebrew, Pshat, which means the simple understanding. So the simple translation is called Pshat. So the fact that it says, you know, Moshe spoke to Jewish people, so Moshe was a person, it's a historical fact, and Moshe did speak to Jewish people, that's called Pshat, that's the simple understanding.
What's that word, please?
Pshat. In English, I guess, P-S-H-A-T, via a transliteration, Pshat. The second level of understanding the Torah we refer to as Remez. Remez means literally like a hint or an allusion. And what that means is that sometimes you'll view a verse in the Torah and it may allude to some other idea, it may hint to something else. Like for instance, this is where when we talk about gematria, numerical values, that fall into the category of hints. You know, it's not exactly there, but it's hinting something else. We talk about the Torah being used as analogies for other ideas or lessons. That could be in the world of Remez. For instance, let's say, if you look at the famous verse, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad in the Torah. So there's two letters in that verse that are written in large, the Ayin and the Dalet. It's written in large in that word. And the Ayin and Dalet spell aid, witness. So one understanding of that is that, you know, we all stand witness to God's unity as Jewish people. But that's a hint. It doesn't tell you what it's supposed to be saying, but you see a hint there to some other concept. And there's a lot of examples of it, but that's called Remez.
The translation of this word, is it esoteric or not?
The translation? The aid? Which one? Oh, Remez.
Remez
literally means like a hint, that's what Remez means, the hint.
So esoteric is not...
I don't think it means esoteric. It means just, it means that there's just some allusion in the passage to something else.
Hidden.
Yeah, something hidden there, which is, and it refers to something else we have to draw out. Remez. Remez.
Remez.
R-E-M-E-Z, I guess. Resh Mem Zayin in Hebrew. Remez. Yeah. So, like, don't forget, like, the word Remez, you know, if I were to, you know, make a little, like, motion with my hand to you, I'm doing Remez. I'm hinting to you. I'm giving you a motion. And Remez tells you it's pointing to something which is there, but you don't really see in the words. That's Remez. And there's many, many examples to Remez. Remez. The next level is called Drush. Drush, D-R-O-S-H, I guess would be the English transliteration, Drush, Dalet Reshin in Hebrew. And Drush means the implications or inferences that can be made from the verse itself. So, for instance, let's think of an example, if I can think of one now. Here, one just comes to mind, totally random example. You know, so the Torah says that, when it comes to Pesach, it says you should not see for yourself chametz in your midst, I think is the verse. So it says you should not see for yourself. So the for yourself has an implication to it. You shouldn't see for yourself chametz, but the Gemara says, but you're allowed to see chametz of others or chametz of the temple. You're allowed to see. So then that's a totally random example, but it's an implication of the verse. It's not there explicitly in the verse. But the verse implies something. The fact there's an extra word may imply something. The fact that it uses a certain word rather than a different word implies something else. So, and that's, you know, the Gemara spends, you know, many, many pages on this part of the Torah called Drush, telling you all the inferences and implications that can be made from this verse in the Torah. So that's another level.
Is that like Drusha? The Drusha?
Yeah, it's the same word.
Same thing.
Right, yeah.
Telling about basically.
Right, just sort of expounding on what you see.
Okay.
Right. Like it's there, but you have to sort of draw it out.
Right.
Remez means you're going to some other topic. You know, it's just a hint. But Drash is saying this is what the Torah implies to us. This is the inference I can make out of this verse. So, I mean, I'm sure I thought through what I could come with other examples, but you have examples like that where each verse will imply other things. And that's based either on extra words, choice of words, lack of words, but it's something which is implied. So those are the first three levels of understanding Torah. The fourth level, which is the one which I'm getting at, is called Sod, which is the one that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Sod would be, S-O-D, English, Samech Vav Dalet in Hebrew. And if you want to use Sod in terms of like modern language, Sod is translated as secret.
Yeah.
I don't like using that translation for the Torah because it's not a secret. No one's keeping it a secret from you. You know, the books are there. You can read the books. But what it means is that it's a level which is deep enough that you have to be at a certain point to really understand the information. So it's not secret in that we're keeping it away from people. It's secret in that you have to be ready to understand it, I guess would be the way to explain it.
Excuse me, is Sod the ultimate level? Is it the deepest level?
It's the deepest level.
It is?
Yeah. It's definitely the deepest level. And the way Sod What we mean by sod is that everything in the Torah is literal in terms that it's a historical book. It did happen. A mitzvah is literal. But also, the Torah is a blueprint of what's happening in higher worlds, deeper worlds. When a person performs a mitzvah, not only are we just performing God's will, we're actually affecting spiritual realms. And sod is what teaches you, in the words of the Torah, how is this what I'm doing affect spiritual realms? How does it affect the way God interacts in the world? It shows you a much deeper aspect of Torah, which is sort of much we call mysticism. It's beyond our world, beyond the simple meaning. People refer to it as mysticism. In that way.
Yeah.
Again, that word also, I think, is sort of cheap in the English language, mysticism. It sounds like, you know, heebie-jeebie, like whatever it is, you know, ghosts and goblins. I don't like using that word either.
Well, what word would you like to use?
What I'd like to use, it's hard to find a translation, but I would say it shows you, I'd say, the ultimate depths of Torah, the ultimate impact of Torah. It's hard to find a good translation sometimes. But
esoteric does not apply.
Yeah, it's
what was your word?
Esoteric.
Right. I mean, it may be somewhat esoteric. Esoteric also implies not grounded. And this is grounded in the text, but it goes much further. Could be the essence of what it means. That could be all these words together. You know, might join together for a good translation.
Either that or we just have to narrow
forces.
Yeah, that's right.
It could be energy. It's not all energy forces, though, but... I guess I think all this together creates the realm of sod. You know, it's hard to, it's hard to hammer down translations sometimes. But what I might say, you know, when you read a story in the Torah, you see that, you know, Yaakov marries Rachel, and so it might teach you that Yaakov represents a certain aspect of the way God works in the world, and Rachel represents another aspect of the way God interacts in the world, and the two of them bond, that represents how God will interact in this way with the world. I mean, it's taking the Torah to a much deeper level. It's showing that every story of the Torah, besides being literally true, besides having a lot of blessings for us in a practical way, is actually an image of God's world in a much deeper sense. That's the best translation. But what so teaches us as well, which is the point that I want to get to today, is that it teaches you how every single letter of the Torah has a meaning to it, and it's significant. When you read the Torah on a simple level, let's call it on the pshat level, so you get certain parts of the Torah which just seem like, why is this here? What's it teaching me? Why is it repeating it over again? You read certain parts about whether it be the history of certain nations or geography or certain sacrifices, and we think about it, and this is on the simple translation level, why is this here? What's it teaching me? Why is the Torah repeating itself? Why? What's the lesson? And when you get to the level of sod, so then sod teaches us how every single part, every single letter, every single dot in the Torah has a much deeper meaning, a significance in a way which is far beyond this all. And that's every single letter. As much as I think on a simple level the letter might not need to be there, sod teaches us how every single letter is totally significant, necessary. And even on a simple level, a Torah missing one letter is invalid Torah. You can't use a Torah scroll. A Torah scroll with one letter which is smudged is totally invalid. You can't read from it. It's totally invalid. You have to get it fixed or you can't use it in shul.
Oh.
So that on a simple level tells us every single letter of the Torah is so significant. But sod is what teaches us that the universal significance of every single letter and how every single letter of the Torah goes far beyond what we can imagine. That's what Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai's Torah, but his lessons really come to teach us. So when we understand the significance of every single letter and word in the Torah, we can relate to another concept, which is that there is a concept, I guess a deeper concept, I don't know if this belongs to the world of sod or not, but a deeper concept, which is that every single soul, every Jew, has its roots in a letter of the Torah. And that really impacts who we are. So the Torah itself, every Jew's soul has its root in one letter in the Torah.
Wow. Even if the letters are repeated. So is it the letter of that word?
Even the context of that letter.
You know, context of that letter.
Yeah, so we don't know which one's our letter in the Torah. You know, there was, I believe, if I remember correctly, the great Vilna Gaon, he was able to figure out which letter corresponded to which person's soul. I think that's something he could do. We can't do that. We have no clue. But every person's soul gets its, you know, energy from one letter of the Torah. It's a famous concept. And even though there may be more Jewish people in history than letters of the Torah, so we could overlap. And some of us could have, you know, it's also possible. Yes?
How many letters are there from the Torah?
I don't know. That's a good question. Probably easy thing to figure out these days with the computer, but you know, I'm not sure.
Quickly, regarding the bonfire. The bonfire. In Morocco, bonfires were places for miracles to happen. Some people would say we'd throw candles, lots of candles, and they would not melt.
Wow.
So bonfires, miracles, were tied. I don't know if there's some
right.
Respect.
I mean, it could be the day itself is a day of miracles, I guess. I don't know.
Because normally candles melt right away.
Right. Right.
Yeah, some people used to say that the candles would not melt.
Right. That's interesting. Yeah. It's like the burning bush.
Yeah.
A day of spirituality. So this idea of every person having their root, one letter of the Torah, it's a very fascinating idea. You know, it shows us that, and we know where our part is, but you know, whatever our part of the Torah is, that's what really affects who we are. It affects what our soul is and how we act. Like all of us, obviously, are different people with different emotions and different drives and ambitions. So the source of that comes from where our letter of the Torah is. So if we think about it that way, we just discussed how Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai taught us, based on his teachings, that every letter of the Torah is significant, has an impact, goes far beyond our world, is necessary. You know, one letter of the Torah missing makes the Torah invalid. One letter smudged renders the Torah invalid. And if we connect that with every Jewish soul, then also we have to recognize that every single Jewish person, it has that same significance. Just like every letter of the Torah has a significance, if every single soul has his letter of the Torah, every letter of the Torah is necessary. That means every single Jewish person is necessary. And therefore, it shows us the importance and significance of every single human being out there. So, therefore, once I know the value of each letter, I know the value of each Jew. I know every Jew is valuable. So, if we think back to Rabbi Akiva's students, why don't we honor other people? How come a person may walk in, I may not honor that person? I don't give them the respect because I feel I don't need that person. They have nothing to offer me. They're beneath me. They have nothing to teach me. They have nothing to give me. If I recognize that person is a letter of the Torah, and that person, you know, God felt that person is worthy to be given the Torah as a Jew, and that person has a soul which has its basis in the Torah itself. And the Torah itself, every single letter is significant. Obviously, that person has significance. If God feels that person significant, obviously the person has something to contribute to me as well. I'm not above the person. The person's not beneath me. That person has something very significant to contribute. Every single person has that. If I recognize that, then I give honor to every person I meet, because I know that just like the Sefer Torah is rendered invalid when one letter is missing or smudged, so too the Jewish people, if one person is not around, that renders us invalid in a certain sense. Every single letter is significant. Every single human being has, just like each letter has such a deep meaning and such a widespread impact on the universe, so too every single Jew. Every single Jew has such a deep meaning and widespread impact on the universe as well. It's the same thing, because every single Jew has the letter of the Torah. So Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, he teaches us that every letter is significant, and we have to translate that into the point that every single human being is significant. Once we walk around with that attitude, so then of course we respect other people. Because you're significant, you impact the entire world. You know, you have deep significance here. And if you think through it, when God gave the Torah on Shavuos, if you read through the Ten Commandments, Ten Commandments is written in second person singular. I am the Lord, you are God, you are in singular. You know, for the South we'd say your versus y'all. You know, but where I'm from, but you are Anochi Hashem Elokecha, right?
That's a good one.
Yeah, right. In Hebrew, you do it. You have that distinction of the plural you and the singular you. You don't have that in most places in America. But yeah. The Torah is given to, the Ten Commandments are said, I am the Lord, your God, you should not do X, you in the singular. Which means that God is speaking to each individual on their own level, to you. You. Everyone gets the Torah individually. Because every person is significant. God's not going to give his Torah to someone who's insignificant. So every Jew is significant enough to merit receiving God's Torah in an individual way. So obviously, that person is significant. We have to respect that person. And if we focus on that before Shavuos, we'll be able to learn how to treat people properly, and we'll be worthy to receive God's Torah. So that's how this all ties together. So just to recap, what we discussed, we discussed how the preparation for receiving the Torah, the prerequisite, is to be able to act in a compassionate, kind manner with Derech Eretz, like a mensch, to treat others appropriately, to act like a good human being, That's a prerequisite for Torah itself. Rabbi Akiva's students, which died during this time of year, the Gemara says, on their own level at least, that they did not respect one another. And that's why they deserved to die through this plague. And that's what happened during this time of year. So this is the time of year to focus in on how to treat other people. And since they were, in a sense, our model, they are our model, to show how important it is to work on how we treat other people, to work on our mitos, to work on our character, and to act, you know, accordingly. Lag BaOmer is a day of joy during this period where the plague stopped. And when we celebrate the Yortzeit of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Shimon Bar Yochai taught us that every single letter of the Torah is significant, which we're supposed to translate into the fact that every human being is significant, because every single Jewish soul has its source in the letter of the Torah. Its energy comes from the letter of the Torah itself. We all have our letter, the finer letter. We all have our letter. In a certain sense, just you know, there are certain people you know who are very much focused on being kindness to others. And that's just who they are. That's like pumps through their blood. And you know, maybe it's because their soul has its root somewhere in the Torah where it talks about kindness. You know, you never know. But that's a possibility. Some people are very much focused in on justice or truth. You know, maybe they have their letter in that area. Some people are very spiritual to people, always praying. Maybe they have their letter somewhere else. Some people are more down to earth. You know, the different personalities of people might be based on where that letter is. You know, we never know. Once we learn how each one of us has a letter, and every single person is significant, we'll learn how to respect one another. And that's the lesson of Lag BaOmer itself, which is why we have such a day of joy and excitement on Lag BaOmer. Yes?
Two questions. Mensch. What is the female word for mensch?
I don't think there is.
Mensch? No, I'm just kidding. I've never heard that
question. Yeah. Is there a female Menchette word?
I don't think there is. I don't know Yiddish all that well, but I don't think there is.
But if we insist so much on mensch, it means the Torah is sexist.
Well, we mention Yiddish. It's just a Yiddish word, and the way we use it is to act like a nice human being, you know, a good person.
Well, there was more,
you know,
obligations on men than women.
Yeah, but I don't think that impacts anything.
And the second,
halakhically, you
second
know,
remark is the death of these 24,000 students. Some can say that it is a cruel punishment.
No, correct, and that's. That's not a topic that I feel I can address or I want to discuss.
For example, why they didn't have diseases that then would go away once they correct themselves. Why death? Why?
I don't know.
Obliteration.
I don't know, but that what I did say before was that people who are on a higher level are held to higher standards. That's very clear. The Gemara teaches us that. That
Moshe not going into Israel.
Right, and Moshe was held to a very higher standard. And Moshe's sin on our level may have been very minor, but yet he was denied entry into Israel because of it.
Yeah, but he was not killed.
He was not killed. That's true. I agree with you. The question needs to be answered. I don't have an answer to it. I'm not sure. But the only thing I can tell you is that when you're on a high level, you hold a higher standard. That's the only answer I can give.
Yeah.
There's one other interesting thing. It's a separate type of point, but I found some explanation to it that I never saw before, which is that on Lag BaOmer, there is a custom out there, having like a field day, a lot of schools do it, and particularly the bow and arrow is supposed to be a symbol of Lag BaOmer for some reason.
Bow and arrow.
And
that,
yeah, right? It's like a big deal. Bow and arrow.
Talk about it as a symbol or to use it? I mean,
yeah, so
archery?
Doing archery like Bow and Arrow for some reason is customary. And I never understood why until last night. I was reading and I saw an explanation of it, which is that we look at the rainbow itself as a negative sign. The rainbow was put in the world after the flood to show that I'm not going to destroy the world again, even though there are times where God might want to destroy the world. We might deserve destruction. The rainbow is God's covenant to the world that we're not going to destroy the world again. It's a negative sign. The Gemara says that when Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was alive, he was such a special person. A rainbow did not appear during his entire lifespan, which means that God had a certain, you know, happiness with the world during Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's life. So on the day he died, we lost his merit, and now the rainbow comes back into existence once again. So the bow and arrow, that bow was reminiscent of the rainbow, was the explanation I saw. And it helps us remember that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was so great that there was no rainbow during his lifetime. It helps us understand that nowadays, you know, that rainbow does exist, so we have to be able to act accordingly and try to hear the rainbow.
Rabbi
Shimon Bar Yochai, yeah.
Y-O-H-A-I.
The Gemara says during his lifespan, there was never a rainbow. And then, which is a good sign. Not having a rainbow is a good sign. We like rainbows, they're pretty, but rainbows are a negative sign.
You make a broker when you see a rainbow, don't you?
That's true. You make a bracha, and the bracha is that God remembers his covenant.
Okay.
And in truth, halachically, you're not supposed to point out a rainbow to someone else. If you see a rainbow, you're not supposed to point it out. Because it's a negative thing. Why should I show you negative signs?
Right.
If you see a rainbow, there's a bracha to say.
Right. One more time, why is it negative? I'm sorry.
Because after the flood, is when the rainbow became God's sign that he won't destroy the world again. And which means that there are times where God wants to destroy the world, but because of his covenant he made with Noah, he won't destroy the world.
Well, then why isn't that a good thing? Why can't we?
No, but it shows God's anger is what it shows. It shows that God has desire. The world deserves destruction just because of the covenant God made with Noah. He's not going to destroy the world. So it's sort of symbolic of God's anger with the world. A rainbow.
So rainbow is symbolic.
Yes, so, contrary to popular belief, a rainbow is a negative sign in Judaism, which is why, luckily, you shouldn't point out the rainbow to somebody else. And if you do see one, there's a blessing to say, which is that God remembers his covenant and keeps his word. That's the blessing you say, that God doesn't destroy us, even though he might want to. That's the blessing.
Yes. Lent Baomer is day 33?
Yeah, day 33 of the Omer. Right.
Now.
Yes.
I understood that you don't stare at it.
But that's also true.
Oh.
Because it's God's way of telling us to mind your ways, to do an inventory of your ego and work on it.
Right, yeah, exactly, right. Because God's saying that, I see imperfections out there, and, imperfections can lead to a destruction like the flood, so you better get yourself in line, We don't need to show your friends, is the point.
That's kind of interesting, because my entire life, when I saw a rainbow, that was God's hand, because what's more natural than a rainbow? And I saw that as the beauty of nature. And I didn't know what the prayer was to say, but I would say a prayer to thank God for the beautiful nature.
Right.
So now, this turns my whole head around. It's just...
Right. I don't know why God chose such a beautiful sign to be the negative sign, because it is beautiful to see a rainbow. I'm not sure why there wasn't a more ugly sign. I'm not sure. I don't know. Yes.
Now, does God promise not to bring a flood or not to destroy?
We've had our floods, so...
You have to look back. I don't remember what the Torah says about it, but... It's the way it seems is that there won't be any more destruction, is what it seems. But I'm not sure. Yes?
I once took a picture of a rainbow down in the Caribbean someplace.
Yeah.
And printed it out and framed it. So it's on a wall. It's really beautiful. Does that mean I shouldn't have it on the wall?
Once it's a picture, once it's in the picture, it's not the real rainbow anymore. So I don't know if you need to take it off your wall. But, But you can look at it now with a different perspective. It can remind you about to change your ways and keep in control. Bring us the tshuva to repent.
I was thinking about haircuts and so brothers when you were talking about Meron.
Right.
And that's probably, I went to Meron.
Right.
That was almost more pronounced and more effective than all the bonfires, which is scattered all over Israel.
Right, of little kids with their haircuts.
Oh, yeah, it's phenomenal to watch this en masse.
Right.
So the
upshurin
ascending the hill.
Wow. Yeah, so those are what Carol's referring to is that the custom of an upshurin, that some people will wait 3 years to cut their boy's hair. So customarily, we wait until Lag BaOmer of that year. And a lot of people will actually bring their kids to Meron to have it done, especially Hasidim do this. They'll bring their kids to Meron to have it done at the grave site of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. That's where they cut the hair. So the haircut's going all over the place, I think.
You're sort of putting in what the archery and stuff. I mean, I think these are just as modern times when you go to, in Israel, Lag BaOmer, you really get a sense of that.
Right, yeah. So we don't feel the day as much in America. In Israel, though, it's really a special day. There's a lot going on.
Even if it's a birthday, they put it off until Lag BaOmer.
A lot of people do. Not everybody. Some people do. Yes, right. Some people do. Especially amongst the Hasidim, they'll do that. I know people in America, people in Chabad, who would actually fly to Israel for their kid's haircut. They'll take their kid on a plane to Israel and get his haircut in Israel.
Yeah.
A fire station. A birthday party slash upshurin. That's cute.
That's really cute. Maybe this isn't a good analogy, but before you were, at the beginning, you were talking about, the balance between, if somebody's, they need to be a good person, a foundation to receive the Torah. I'm a nurse, so it kind of maybe it's not a good analogy, but it kind of reminds me like Maslow's hierarchy, before you can actualize your potential, you need food, water, whatever, and then there's this pyramid, and
right.
then I don't know, just for me, I guess a nursing person, you know, healthcare person, it reminds me, oh, so you need your
that,
basic.
The pyramid, right.
Yeah, like your basic needs, and then right. you can take on the, you know, Christy the Torah.
Right, yeah, there's basic needs as a human being, and then there is moving beyond that. We hope that we all aim to go beyond that, but first we need to make sure we have everything else in place as a human being, then time to move beyond. You know, usually we're working on it simultaneously, but there's time to focus in on the foundation. We just have to put in that perspective of foundations versus, you know, the top levels.
Yeah.
You know? But it doesn't mean that we should drop the midst of the Torah to work on our midos. It doesn't mean that.
Right.
But it means that simultaneously let's understand how the hierarchy fits in, what the structure is supposed to be.
Just wondering why now, modern times, when we think about the Torah, we think about this time of year, we generally don't associate it with character building. I think it's more... so therefore we're prohibited from this, that, and the other.
Right.
But you really don't.
It's around Rosh Hashanah.
It's not something that comes up in Rosh Hashanah. Should it?
Right.
When you're raising it.
Yeah, it totally should.
Most and no sure in that.
Right.
That
well, the place where you usually find it is in studying Pirkei Avos. That's a major custom this time of year. Studying Pirkei Avos. Many shuls have the custom of actually reading it as part of davening on Shabbos during these weeks.
Yeah.
Some shuls have class. I know Rabbi Rosenbaum started a class in Pirkei Avos, in Shomrei, Tuesday nights. Right, yeah.
Thanks, it's good to know. Eight
yeah.
8 o'clock, Shomrei?
8:15.
Thank you.
Yes, I know that started. So that's where you really see it most pronounced. And also, when you look in your siddur, when it talks about Chaim Yomer, you'll see all the different midos in there, which they don't really mean that much to us.
Right.
But really, they're focusing in on midos. You could get certain books to explain what they mean, or even online, on ish.com, that has explanations of what they mean.
Oh, okay.
And that'll apply it to how we can actually apply those to our character.
Yeah,
so that should be a focus. I mean, unfortunately, the morning practices do sort of take over, because prohibitions always, you know, jump at us and, you know, make us feel them. But that really is not the focus. The focus should be more on the anticipation for Shavuos, the character building. That really should be the focus. It's unfortunate if it gets flipped. You know?
What is the numerical value for lag? Lag. Numerical value.
Lag 33.
Oh.
33. 33 in
the omen. I felt there was something in lag.
Lag.
And there it is.
24,000.
It seems like that was all of them.
That's what I was going to say.
It seems like that was all the students.
But he started with five. Were there any left?
No, the five were after. He found five new students.
But I thought that night that they were studying is when it stopped, when they realized something they were studying hit them.
I think it's more of the
left. Those died that were studying that night, too?
Well, it could be, that day, no one died. So that day, that night in Dave Lugwomer, nobody died. The death stopped before that day. It's actually unclear if the plague stopped on the 32nd day or just took a break during that day. So it did take a break that day, but eventually all his students did die. But Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai came along later. He was one of Rabbi Akiva's students, I think, after the fact. But it just means that the day itself has the power to teach us that lesson, is the point I'm making. That there's a day where that lesson should be prominent, the lesson of respecting every single person who's prominent on that day. I think, if I remember correctly, that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was a student of Rabbi Akiva after this whole tragedy. If I remember correctly, I think that was one of his next five students. If I remember correctly, I might be wrong about that, but if I remember correctly.
And how long did the dying go on for? How many, was it years, months?
No, so it was during only this 32 days.
That's it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
The Gemara says it was between Pesach and Shavuos. It's only a short period of time.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a terrible tragedy. It customarily, again, happened 32 days. If it was the first 32 or last 32, it was unclear.
But we go back to morning again, though. We go back on day 34, we continue again.
Well, not everyone does. It depends. You can break up, traditionally, you can break it up into one of two halves. You can either more than the first 32 days or the last 32 days.
But not the entire...
Approximately. Yeah, there are those who might more the entire time, but that's not a common custom. Customarily, the entire time? People have weddings. I got married during the Omer, the first half before Rosh Chodesh Iyar, before the second half of the morning started. I got married during that time. People will get married after Lag BaOmer as well sometimes.
Right.
Yeah.
Can you change your custom from year to year?
Yeah, you can.
Yeah,
depending on what's coming up in life, you can change your custom. Right.
But
so the two customs are either to go from second day of Pesach through Lag BaOmer, or from Rosh Chodesh Iyar until 3 days before Shavuos. Those are the two main customs.
Let's go.
You can take your choice year by year. You're allowed to choose which one you want to do yearly.
One more time, I'm holding you up. Second day of Pesach.